dedicated to each and every one of you who appreciate a great glass of wine. You know what I mean?
It's Monday. Let's raise a glass to the beginning of another week. It's time to unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle, and let's begin exploring the wine glass. Today on the podcast, we return to Winefabet Street, where the letter of the day is V, and it stands for Villain. I was so excited to be able to see some familiar faces, even if it was only through the computer. Talking with Andres Horque, Andrea Geary, and Erhard Human brought back wonderful memories of my trip to Villain a couple of years ago for the Franc & Franc conference. Everyone knows how much of a Cab Franc fiend I am, so when it came to reaching out for a sponsor for the letter V, I knew where to go and was beyond thrilled they agreed to share their stories with us. An extra special thank you to Atia Tansko for arranging everything. I know you are going to enjoy this episode as much as I did. The wines are distributed in the United States, so be sure to find them and add them to your collection. I promise you won't be disappointed. Hey everybody, I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program, sommelier service, champagne specialist, and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials, as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time to swipe, subscribe, rate, and review. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass.
Oh yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Winefabet Street. It is hard to believe that we are in the second season and already up to the letter V. And I mean, I know I say this a lot, I get excited every month that we do Winefabet Street, but this month I am beyond excited because I am seeing faces that I met, like I think it's 2 or 3 years ago when I had the honor of traveling to Villain. As us Americans, Villeneuve, and I got to see them, and it's so nice to see faces again. And Villeneuve is known for their Cab Franc, and everybody knows how I am all about the Cab Franc. So welcome, welcome, welcome. We have three amazing guests here today. We have Andres Horque, Andrea Geer, and Erhard Human, who I probably pronounced incorrectly, but, you know.
It's perfect.
That is what Americans do so well, pronounce things incorrectly. So if you guys want to do a brief introduction first and tell us who you are and how you are into the wine world, and we will get going. So Andres, you want to start first?
Okay, so hi everyone. I'm very happy to see you again after a few years, and I'm very happy to be here on this tasting today. So I'm representing our family winery. So we have a family winery since 1978, let's say. Actually dates back seven generations, so it has a longer history. But as you may know, Hungary had a little break for two generations. So actually my father had to restart everything in 78. So that was the point when our family business started again. So now we are cultivating 75 hectares of plantation. And I am working also in the family winery now since 2003. Actually, it's a family business. So everybody can find its own work and their own task in the family. We are not only making wine, we are also in the hospitality. So we have a small family hotel with a restaurant. So it's a more complex thing. But we love it, and wine is a beautiful thing. So I'm very happy to work in the family business. And it's nice to work with the family together.
Beautiful. Erhard?
Okay. Maybe it takes a little bit longer, more from my side, because I think I have to explain why we are making wine as foreigners in Hungary. And the starting point is the US. In 1973, I traveled with Greyhound bus, had a 2 month Greyhound ticket, and there I met in Las Vegas in the Greyhound terminal at 5 o'clock in the morning a young Swiss lady. Okay, afterwards we traveled together. She came to Germany to visit me. She stayed there, worked there during the time I had to finish my school. Afterwards, I studied in Konstanz, which is a university close to the Swiss border. And from then on, we lived together. That means 48 years now. And only in Switzerland, I learned about wine. Before, I only had, let's say, a glass of semi-sweet Lambrusco, but that was all. But during my time in Switzerland, I learned about good food, and then, of course, I learned about good wine. And the reason was the husband of the best friend of my wife, Italian, he was very much into wine, and he pushed me, and I was very, I became very interested in wine, drinking wine, reading about wine. And when my father-in-law, approximately 30 years ago, came to Villain for a different reason, he was making fireplaces back home in Switzerland. And somebody has told him that he can make quite cheaply metal parts for his fireplaces. He came here. That business that did not work, but when he came back, he has bought a small plot of land where he also built a small weekend house where we are living now here. And then over time we started to make hobby-wise some wine and decided in 2003 to start in a professional way with approximately 2,000, 2,500 bottles at this time. Currently we have 35,000 bottles with 12 hectares, 10 hectares yielding.
I'm the only one who doesn't have a winery, and I'm not a winemaker. But my life is around the wine continuously. So I'm the owner of the Central European Wine Institute here in Hungary, which is a WSET APP school in the country. And I'm an official wine educator, and I'm working for the wine region, the Villain wine region, like a strategic advisor, marketing, communication, some branding. And we are doing together the brand building since, I don't know, it's probably 6-8 years now. And I'm very happy to work with them, of course. And I'm also a freelance wine promoter of all the Hungarian wines. I was for 6 years the head of the Hungarian Wine Expert Committee. So basically everything which is not making wine, it's my profession around the wine.
Awesome. And my co-host, Debbie.
I'm Debbie Giaquindo. I'm a certified specialist of wine and a wine location specialist in Port and Champagne. I'm the author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, Day Trips and Weekend Itineraries, visiting all the craft beverage producers in the Hudson Valley. I am co-owner or partner in a restaurant in North Wildwood, New Jersey, called Trio North Wildwood, where you can also get Lori's wine to pair with your meal. And my grandfather was from Hungary. So anytime we talk about Hungarian wines, it's like I'm coming home, because we were very instrumental in the, and I know I can't pronounce this, the Tapakola region of Hungary. And there's the coat of arms for the Lesner family. That's my maiden name. And one of these days when we can travel again, that is my next trip, is to Hungary to see where my grandfather grew up, where my great grandmother had the keys to the wine cellar on the main street. So that's, this is.
And of course, this is
beautiful.
Beautiful. So.
Awesome. And I am Lori. My husband and I own Dracena Wines in Paso Robles, California. We specialize in beloved Cabernet Franc. And in addition to that, my UC Davis winemaking degree, I also have WSET Level 2 Champagne Specialist and Somm Service. So we are so excited to get into Villain today. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. But we're going to start off with our little video for our introduction. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. welcome, welcome, welcome. And we are here to talk about Villan. I know we always say Villane, and I keep trying to fix it. but one day. So my first question is, let's get right into it and talk about the PDO itself. So where is it located? How large is it? Let's get some information about the PDO itself.
If it's okay, we prepared a very short presentation, okay? Mm-hmm. So where is Villan and what you have to know about that? Is it on there or?
Yeah, do you want me to? I can start it for you if you want.
Okay, thank you very much. So just very, very, very shortly, really. It's so the story between Villan and the Cabernet Franc starts somewhere in the beginning of 2000 when one of the world most well-known wine expert, Sir Michael Broadbent, visited Villan, and he mentioned his visit and his experience in the decanter. And he said his Cabernet Franc has just found his natural home in Villan. So he was really the first big name or most influential wine expert for turning to the attention of the Villan winemaker to special this grape variety, because used to that we have many border variety like Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, but mostly in blend. And since that, we try to focus, I mean, the Villan wine region try to focus on the special grape variety, which grape varieties are loved in Villan, and Lori as well, as we already know, which origin is back to France, and it's a very versatile variety, which is quite good with adaptability for different climate, from the cooler Maritime climate in Loire to Tuscany with the more Mediterranean climate, or even to Villan, which is a sub-Mediterranean climate. Also, the soil is very different in the Loire, in Tuscany, or in Villan, but the limestone clay loss combination almost everywhere we can find just as well in Villan. We believe that the grape variety itself is more versatile than the Cabernet Sauvignon. It's very similar to structure with the high tannin, with a little bit high acidity, but the fruitiness, it's not just black, but also the black and red fruit combination with very juicy fruits, but at the same time some sour fruit as well, what we rarely find in a Cabernet Sauvignon. And we know it's, of course, this is the majority of the vineyard area is in France and next to Italy. But if we take a look around, that Hungary has the fifth biggest plantation in the world from this grape variety. And especially in Hungary, the majority of this Cabernet Franc is in Villan. So that's why we have very high importance of this critical grape variety, which is in Hungary, we have 22 wine regions. And within these 22 wine regions, we can see it spread all over the country. So from north to south, from west to northeast, almost everywhere. And just like all the other Central Eastern European countries, the majority of our vineyard area covered by white grape varieties. So it's 70% is white, and only 30% is black grape varieties, which majority is located at the south, where is also Villan, you can find it. The majority of the black grape varieties are mostly international grape varieties, for regional grape varieties like Cake Francoche or Blau Frankish. The next one is Cabernet Sauvignon, the Merlot, and the Cabernet Franc, which is the fourth most planted grape variety, black grape variety in Hungary. And now we get into Villan, which is our home, if we can say that, which is down to the south. We have seven districts in Hungary. And Villan is located in the southern district of the country, which we call the Pannon district. And within that, it's just the southernmost region next to the Croatian border, absolutely. which is around 2,400 hectares, which is in Hungarian terms is a mid-sized wine region with a very special location. And because this is the southest point of the country, this is the warmest point at the same time of the country. The climate is all around in Hungary, mostly continental, but here we almost say sub-Mediterranean. It's the average sunshine hour is higher than anywhere else in the country. The average temperature is also higher, at least 1 degree than in the north. It's the precipitation is average, like anywhere else. The problem is that this is mostly between March and, I would say, in October, but not in this year, because we have extremely difficult March and April. It was very wet, but from May to July, it was absolutely without any rain, without any showers. So it's a serious problem. About the surface is moderate hilly. The region between 150 and 350 above the sea level. But the most of the best sites around 200-250 meters above the sea level. The soil is a mix of limestone, a loess, a clay, or loam, a brown forest floor. So it's a pretty versatile soil. But if I'm going back for this map, it's we can say we can divide it for two sub-regions, the region. One is the eastern part, which we call V-line. That's the more hilly side. And here the soil is mostly clay, brown forest floor, mar or loam. And on the western side of the area, it's we call the Siklos area. So the Gera Winery is located in the V-line area, and the Hoymann Winery mostly located in the Siklos area. So Siklos is less steep slope, if I can say that. So much more moderate, and the soil is much more limestone and loess combination. So it's a little bit higher acidity what we can find there. About the grape varieties, the second most important grape varieties, it's the Cabernet Franc, and it's almost there to being the first. It's the Cabernet Sauvignon was much ahead of the Cabernet Franc, but now it's just a very little the difference between them. It's more and more wine producer focused on the Cabernet Franc, like a single grape variety, which is in style is absolutely different than what you can taste in Loire or anywhere else in Europe, because of the climate, because of the soil. It's a fuller body with higher tannin. It's with a still vivid acidity and a little bit of higher alcohol, but because of the location. So again, this is almost a sub-Mediterranean climate. So it's reduced the alcohol. It's a very difficult thing. The flavors are very ripe, black and red fruits flavors, combination of black cherry, red cherry, bramble fruit, plum. And also, it's very spicy flavors with black pepper, some herbaceous flavors. And because by the regulation also, the V-line winemakers use quite frequently aging the oak from 250 for 500 liters. It's, you can feel also the notes of the oak age or the oak in the different sweet spices or dark chocolate. And of course, every premium brand need a very serious classification system. And in terms of Cabernet Franc, in V-line, we have a three-tier classification system. The first is a classicus, that's the basic. That's which is gave the very solid foundation of the Cabernet Franc in V-line. It's no obligation or no necessary aging in this category. Mostly it's age for maximum of half year or a year in oak and bottle, but some producer make without any oak. The second category, it's one of the most precious category. It's a premium category. The premium, it means lower yield, and it's already a minimum 1 year aging requirement in oak. It's normally in this category, it means from 16, 18 months to 24 months. Andra and Erhard will tell what different oak type that they use. And in this category, we use the expansion of the Villagny Franc. So from this premium level, we don't use the Cabernet Franc, mostly we use the Villagny. And from 2015, there is a super premium category also from the 2015 vintage, which is the lowest yield. And there is a minimum of 2 years aging, which is at least 1 year in oak. But normally here it's around 18 months to 24 months, the aging time in oak, and then extra 1 year in the bottle before the release. And in this case, it must have to 100% Cabernet Franc. So this is, I would say, the DOP or AOC regulation within the 2,400 hectares, whereas the Cabernet Franc, like a brand and like a premium variety, the most important variety of the region.
Deb, do you have a question?
No, you know, actually, my question was about the different classes. That actually, I've written that down because I wanted you to explain it. But the premium does not have to be 100%. Is there a minimum amount of Cab Franc that it has to be?
85% is a minimum, but the generally the premium is also 100% Cabernet Franc.
Okay, and the classic would be 85, at least 85% as well.
Yeah. Yeah, by the law, if you put on the grape variety on the label, like a single grape variety, it means it's 85% at least.
Okay.
So in America, we have a 75. Our rule is 75. So to call it Cabernet Franc in America, it needs to be 75% Cab Franc. So
we take this very seriously in Villagny, because if it's written on the label, the grape variety, and especially for the premium brand, the Cabernet Franc or Villagny Franc, it means it's almost, in all the cases, it's 100% Cabernet Franc. The majority of the Hungarian white grape varieties are unique, indigenous Hungarian grape varieties or regional grape varieties. So like Furmint, like Olasz Riesling, like Harsh Levelű, like Hungarian Crossings. Of course, we have Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc and Rhine Riesling. But I would say this is the more well-known, but the majority, it's absolutely Hungarian grape practice.
Andrea and Erhard, your wineries are in the two different regions of Villagny. And so in terms of the ripening of the, I know they're not very far apart, because not that I was driving, so I can't tell you how long it took to get from one to the other. I was just in awe of everything around me. But in terms of ripening and each of your Cabernet Francs, how do they differ, or are they really truly aligned in those two regions or sub-regions, I should say?
Andrea, is it you or me?
Okay, just a few sentences. So as Andras mentioned, our winery is located in our vineyards are mostly located closer to the Villagny part, which is a little bit warmer, I think. Also, the valleys are a little bit, or the hillsides are a little bit steeper. So I think also the ripeness is reached. The optimal ripeness is reached a bit earlier in comparison to the other part of the wine region. So in the south, we really have to take care on the real timing and the optimum timing of the harvest. Otherwise, we would lose the acidity, and that would bring the wine out of balance, which is very, very crucial. So sometimes only it's a half day when you do have to do the harvest. So I think if you taste the two wines side by side, you will really feel the difference in the style. As Andras already mentioned, it will be a little bit, from my taste, a little bit more sunshine maybe in the Villagny part wines, like our wine, and more refreshing and fruity style more from the other part. But there is actually not a big distance between the two areas. I think it's 15 minutes driving, Erhard, or something like that.
Probably, yeah.
So it's really 10
kilometers.
Big, not a big distance, but the special microclimates from the special vineyards can really give a special character to the wine. So even if they are very close to each other.
Yes, I fully agree with what you have said. I think that we in the Sikfors sub area have a slightly higher acidity. And this was presumably the reason that Sikfors was regarded as a white wine spot, let's say, in earlier times. So the reason, in my opinion, is it might be a little bit cooler, slightly, but I also think that the layer of lus is less thick than in most of the parts in the Wilhine region. So we get more of this minerality in the wine, so have much more acidity because the whole hillside is limestone. You may not forget this.
And then in terms of the winemaking process itself, are you both like looking for that same Brix level region, you know, range? Are you acidifying, or, you know, to, you know, are the specs you're looking for similar?
I think it's from our side, it's not necessary to add some acidity because the nature gives us sufficient acidity. Like I said, it's limestone area, and you always have quite a high acidity. In 2016, we had, I think, 5.9 grams per liter of acidity for the for our Villani Franc 2016. So this is even with 15 alcohol, you feel that this wine is quite elegant and fruity. So that's not a, it's powerful, but yeah.
I totally agree. So we do not do any add acidity to the wine. Crucial is optimum the harvest time, and of course we are striving for balance. This is very, very, very important. And we, in our region, as Andras also mentioned, it's a beautiful combination of a sub-Mediterranean climate that gives the roundness, the softness, the sunshine to the wine in the taste. And on the other hand, there is the soil, which is based everywhere on limestone. And limestone can give a beautiful minerality, which gives vibration to the wine. So you can feel that the wine has liveliness inside there. And that's it gives really a beautiful balance in the softness from the sunshine and the ripeness and the beautiful vibration from the soil.
Do you use native yeast for fermentation?
We use native yeast from selected yeast from my grandfather's old cellar because that has never he never used cultured yeast before.
Okay.
So we went there and we selected some yeast from his own cellar, old cellar, and we use his yeast actually with the help of the research center in Page for viticulture and winemaking, with their help. We could make our own yeast, and we add this yeast for fermentation of our wine.
No, we use cultured yeast.
Okay. And then I want to talk a little bit about the history of, I guess this is, it ties into the wine world, because I know when we visited, we spent a few days prior in Budapest, and we saw the museum that was dedicated to the 1956 revolution. And I have to say, being the naive American again, I had no clue that there was such recent history of the revolution, you know, in turn, so close to this. How did that play a role in the wine world, you know, in the Villan and Hungarian wine? How did that go from what they were, you know, determining to wine to the quality that you now have?
I cannot talk about this because I only came in 2003. So,
yeah. Okay, just a few sentences. So it's, as I mentioned in my introduction, that my parents also started in 78, first dealing with wine and viticulture. But actually, at that time, we had communist regime in Hungary. So it was not really allowed to have big vineyards or to buy land, or the maximum what a family could own was only 1 hectare of plantation. And you could not sell your wine privately. So you had to give your wine all the time to the state-owned cooperative. And there all the wines were mixed. And they made a big, big blend with, of course, not a good quality. And it was mostly sold to the Soviet Union. So actually, it was a shame, because the quality of Hungarian wine was bad at that time. But the Hungarian wine had a big history. They were making really good wines in Hungary, and we have also the qualities for good winemaking here in the Carpathian Basin. And that was totally destroyed during the communist era. And after the fall of the regime in 1989, that opened the doors again, let's say. So from that point on, it was possible to buy land again. And from that point on, could also our real family winery start its work, because then my father could buy land. My grandfather told him which were the best locations for growing grapes before the communist regime. Because at that time, the slopes, the steep slopes, they were left there because it was hard to cultivate, and they were just striving for quantity, not for quality. So all these beautiful hillsides had to be replanted again. So big, big melioration work had to be started at that time. So we were also buying land step by step. So we could just sell some wine. We earned some money, and then we could buy a little land again. So that was just a step-by-step building. And the quality, of course, at the beginning of the 90s was not the same as we can taste today. Because at that time, my father's generation had to learn everything from zero again. So these big books, in comparison, let's say, with in France or in Spain, these big books were the generation wrote from time to time. They gave it to another generation. Here are the things what we experience. Please use that. You do not have to find out new things. This is working. So this was missing in Hungary, and my father's generation had to actually start again to write these books: how to cultivate the vines, what is the best yield control, what type of oak to use, what to do in the vineyard, and of course learn their own vine region, what qualities it has. So, and it takes actually a long, long time. As you know, it's in winemaking and viticulture, everything takes years, many, many years. If you do a plantation, then after 6 years, you can taste the wine, because you have to wait 3 years to harvest the first bunches. And then you make the wine, you age it in the barrel and then in the bottle. So it takes a long, long time. But I think Hungarian winemakers have done a huge work in these, let's say, short 20 years or 30 years, because it was really a big jump in the quality beginning of the 90s till today.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Looking to be in the know about Dracena wines? Want to be the first to know about our new releases and special offers? All you need to do is sign up for our newsletter. There is no commitment necessary, and I promise you we won't spam your mailbox with loads of messages. Need another reason to sign up? Quite possibly the best reason? You'll immediately get a discount code for 10% off your first purchase and be privy to newsletter-only discounts. Let Dracena Wines turn your moments into great memories. Visit our website, www.dracenawines.com, or use the link in show notes to sign up. It will take you less than a minute, but the rewards will last a lifetime.
Yeah, it's a huge development in the last 30 years. It's just giving the numbers of these things. When in 2000, in the 60s, in Hungary had 200,000 hectares under wine. Without Hungary was the biggest wine supplier of the, not just the Eastern Bloc, but next to France, Spain, and Italy. Hungary was the fourth or fifth biggest wine producer of Europe. Then during the, of course, all this wine is just Andra mentioned that it's we supply the whole Eastern Bloc. So like in the barter business. So we give them wine, we got the cars from Soviet Union or whatever. So it's it was a barter business. Since the 90s, it was a lot of changes. During the 90s, we have 100,000 hectares. When we joined the EU, we have 82,000 hectares. And now we have 65,000 hectares. But this is now the level from, I don't know, it's the last 7 to 8 years. And that's what is good for us, for the size of country of Hungary. It's way enough. And of course, the production level in the same time is changed from quantity to quality. So now we have around 2.5, 3 million hectoliters yearly production, which is absolutely good for the Hungarian market. 85% is consumed domestically. Around 15% goes to the international market for export. Just as Andrea mentioned, that the quality, which is constantly rising, that's the future of the Hungarian wines, because we don't need any more volume producing. We have to much more focusing on the quality. And now it's already, since the 90s, there's the second and third generations already involved in the wine business and wine production, which is also, it's a very, very important thing, because a lot of young people with full of enthusiasm and keen to show the world how precious the Hungarian wines.
Andrea, I have a question for you. So back when the communists controlled Hungary and they took the land from the people, and you were only allowed to have whatever, the 1 hectare acre. When the communist rule was broken, were you able to go back and claim that land that was at one point in your family and get it back?
Yeah, it was a little bit funny, because you got some families got some kind of, I don't know the right word for in translation into English, kind of vouchers. Yep. That you can get a piece of land, what you had before. But yeah, it was not the same land what you owned before.
Okay.
It was a land somewhere else, maybe. So it's not the same quality. It was not working well. So you could, mostly the families could not get back the same, exactly the same land what they had before.
Yeah, because we got that too.
Yeah.
I remember when I was there and Joseph Bach was telling the story of him and how his family's, you know, land was taken from him and all of that. By the time he finished the story, I was in tears here, you know, like it was such a, you know, I keep going back to us, you know, stupid American. We just don't, you know, you're not living through that. You don't see that. It's so hard to picture it. And then to hear the stories of the people who lived through it was so impressionable. You know, 3 years later, I still remember his, you know, what he was telling me.
Yeah.
But
I didn't realize you couldn't get back the same piece of land. I mean, I don't want to say I was young when this happened, but it wasn't explained to me 100%. But, yeah.
So I say that we do more happy things.
Okay.
We went from Hungary just making a lot of wine to export it out to, I can attest to some seriously high quality wine today. So let's get tasting some of this wine.
I've got mine. Which one should I taste first?
Who wants to go first?
Well, it's two different vintages, but the one is with the Trinitas, Erhard's wine. It's 2016 is a premium.
Okay, that's this one.
And Andrea's wine is 2017, but that's the super premium.
Okay.
So we normally, of course, we follow the vintages, but in this case, because what is premium, what is super premium, we would start, I think, the premium with Erhard's wine, and then with Andrea's wine.
Ooh. Okay, so
nice black.
As we already have learned, this the grapes are grown in the Chicov sub area, Okay, first I have to explain. If you show this bottle, and yeah, if you look, it's different because Trinitas, we had a trademark issue in the US, so oh, really? We had to keep Trinitas or have a new label for the 2016 for a tasting table, and we had to deliver it to another importer. So stickers where we made the Trinitas name black, because there's a winery in California with this name, and so we had some issues there. So in the US we will not sell this as Trinitas anymore. For 2017 we are looking for a new name which might be feasible also in the US. So we will see what we will decide in the next few weeks. What's the reason? Okay, this Trinitas or this Villaine Franc from 2016 was mainly sourced from a vineyard, which is definitely called Trinitas. This name Trinitas goes back to, I think, to the 8th century. It's a hillside it's called the Vauquin region. It's a small village, but it's also a hillside, and we have planted up there this Cap Franc. It's a plateau, which is gorgeous because during the day you have sunshine, during the night you have cooler temperatures. It's also good because it's partly surrounded by forests, so it cools quite well down. It also when it's wet and it's windy, it dries out very well. So this is, for me, this is one of the perfect places to grow grape varieties. Doesn't matter which one, but definitely also for Cab Franc. This is also based on the two top clones, two top French clones. We used 327 and 214. On Vercal, which gives us very, very low yields. So we have currently 25 hectoliters per hectare, which is very, very low. And also, okay, on the other hand, we have the issue with a little bit higher alcohol levels. But as we can see with this wine, we have close to 6 grams acidity. So that balances the wine as well. We major or fermentation, the alcoholic fermentation is around 14 days. We now started to have even a little bit longer, and the maturation in the barrels is 24 months. We use for 2016, we used mainly Hungarian oak. We now on the way to also bring in some French oak and use more top Hungarian oak to even lift the quality of the wine itself. And after this 24 months, we put the wine together in a stainless steel tank that they grow together for 2 months and then bottle.
You said that it was clone 214, and what was the other clone?
327.
327. And, you know, we have these classifications. Are you determining which classification you wanted to go into while you're going through the winemaking process? Or after you're tasting it in barrel, you then submit to a specific classification?
Okay. First of all, definitely the second part, but I think this would also go into a super premium category. The only reason is this vineyard is not registered for super premium, so we fulfill all the requirements. Again, we have 25 hectoliters per hectare. We age it for 2 years. Even in barrels, not only partly in bottles and barrels. So, and I think quality wise, it's it should go into super premium, but as I export, let's say 90 or more than 90% abroad, nobody abroad knows about this classic premium, super premium category. It's also relatively complex or complicated to explain to my foreign clients what's behind that. So currently I'm only pushing Heumann. That's the point. And always like to try have a kind of brand name, which also gives a certain, that you can refine it.
I was really, in researching, I didn't realize that there was classifications. So now that just, opened my eyes to, Hungarian wine, because I bought Hungarian wine in the past and just never, never knew.
You have to explain this to the clients. It's known in Hungary now, but if you want to transform this into abroad, you need to have quite a lot of money to do some marketing. If nobody knows about this, that's a problem. So I don't have the power, the financial power.
Also educating.
So I have
educating the people about the classifications.
Yep.
And this classification protocol, there you have a group that. Are they they're tasting this wine? Because they come through and they're checking up on you, correct? So can you just explain how the regulations, how they make sure, how you're guaranteeing them, I guess, that these classifications are done? Because they're checking on you.
Who wants to answer?
So
there is a regular classification board. I mean, tasting.
That's the board. Board.
who taste every Cabernet Franc or Villaine Franc wine based on the classification level of the producer mark. Okay. And there is a general board and there is a specific board for Villaine Franc and Cabernet Franc. And they are the only one who can. Make a decision, is this category is fulfill the requirement of the premium or the super premium category. So this is not from outside, this is from a very small group of people, experts, winemakers from Villaine, who made the decision, who has a right to make the decision to evaluate the system and the wines.
Perfect. That word board was going at it. I couldn't think of it. And then, Erhard, I don't know if you can answer this or not, because it is in America. Do you know what this would retail for people here in the United States who would like to purchase it?
I can find it out. Hold on for a second there.
Okay.
I will find it out during the yeah.
Perfect. And while you're searching, Let's try
Andrea's wine. So the next wine is
it's a lot different in aromas.
Mm-hmm.
I smell
that's
more.
That's what I was telling. Even if they are not at a big distance from each other,
yeah.
The two stations, but they can give really different character and different characteristics. What you can find in the nose, on the palate. So it's
This has more baked fruit, I think, in it. I gotta keep
it's going. A warmer location.
Yeah.
So actually we are working with Cabernet Franc for a long time, almost 30 years. So our first vintage was 92, what we made with the family, and we do not make it every year. So we do make this wine only in the best vintages. So it's very, very interesting when we do vertical tasting. So when we taste through all these vintages, what we have done so far, and it's really visible and tasteable, the difference between the wines of the 90s and the wines after 2000. It was a big change, and actually it shows also our way of learning and how we made and softened those always the wine, made the refinement all the time, because we were learning our wine, our location, our vineyards, our winemaking and viticulture. So if we talk about the wines of the 90s, they were a little bit I would say more tannins, more direct tannins, and the wines were more robust, I would say. And of course, at that time, we were working with a bit higher yields in comparison to today. So, and after 2000, that was, I would say that was a big change. 2000 was a vintage, was a big change in our region. So from 2000, we were working with five, six bunches per vine, not more, for the top wines, also for the Cabernet Franc. So it means around 0.7 kilograms per vine. And the tannins were not that much direct. They were more velvety, more round. They are there. They are present. When the wines are young, of course, more present than later. So, but there were more fruitiness in the wine and more kindness, more roundness. Okay, it was also a bit higher alcohol. But I think we are focusing in our winery very much to have not too high alcohol, because that can bring also the wine out of balance. So, and I'm, to be honest, I never checking the alcohol on the label. Only after tasting, I feel that it stands out. So if it's burning my throat, then I'm checking what's the alcohol level. And also a 13.5% alcohol can stand out if the wine has not enough body. So, not only the 14 or the 14.5%. So that's these wines are more lovely after 2000. They're more lovely, more what people would love to taste, what love to drink. And if we are talking about our Cabernet Francs, we were always striving for elegance, for balance, and for harmony. That's the most important thing. And we were always experimenting with fermentation temperature, stainless steel or oak fermentation, where to do the malolactic fermentation in oak or together with the alcoholic fermentation. So there were many points and decision points what we had to make in these years. Now we have answered almost all the questions in these last 20 years to 30 years. So we can say we have a recipe for the Cabernet Franc, what we do. Of course, not all the vintages are the same, so we have to change a bit all the time, depending on the style of the vintage. But elegance, balance, and harmony is always the key when we do the Cabernet Franc. So what we are tasting, it's as I said, 100% Cabernet Franc, and it's a single vineyard wine coming from the Ördögárok, we say in Hungarian, that's the name of the vineyard. If we would like to translate, it would say Devil's Ditch. It's a quite steep area. I don't know whether, Laura, you have to see, you have been there visiting that place. It's beautiful, really. And it's also a newly recultivated area. My father was the one who started to recultivate first that part of the region, because that was in the state-owned cooperative sign that was left there, not cultivated anymore because it was too steep. So my grandfather told to my father, this is the place what you, when you can buy a place, field here, then please do it, because that was one of the best place to grow grapes for highest quality. So my father have done that, and he started the recultivation program beginning of of 2000. So it's actually, you have to imagine Devil's Ditch like a closed valley. So the worm gets stuck in there. It ripens the berries in a very nice way. So the tannins are always velvety in this wine. Ripe and velvety. Actually, we do not like overripeness. So that's why we take care very much on the harvest time to find the ideal point. And the wine was aged 16 months in oak, First, we used only at the beginning, we used only new oak, 225 liter barrels. Okay, testing a little many different types of oak, French oak, American oak, Hungarian, different types of Hungarian oak as well. But now finally we are using only Hungarian oak because we think that the style of the Hungarian oak matches very, very well our style of wines. But we are using only oak coming from the northern part of the country because there the tannins of the oak are much softer. And we have enough tannins in our grapes, so we do not need more tannins from the oak. So that's why we use the northern part oak from Hungary, because that gives very nice elegance to the wine. And it integrates itself in a very nice and elegant way into the wine. So 16 months in oak, and we use 300 liter barrels, so a bit bigger than the normal, let's say, barrique size, 225. That was also a longer experimentation to make that decision. And after that, we aged the wine in the bottle. Of course, we have to do that 2 years aging to reach the super premium level. But we do a bit longer because 16 months in oak, and then we age around 1 year in the bottle before it enters the market. So a bit longer. And since 2015, we make two single vineyards, Villagny France, in the best vintages. The other location is the Star Valley, which gives a totally different character and different style of Cabernet Franc, because this is not a very closed valley as the Devil's Ditch, what we are tasting now. It's a more open valley, not that steep. It's more fruity, a little bit more freshness in there. And actually, we do the vineyard work, the yield control, the aging, everything as we would do for the super premium quality level. But unfortunately, sometimes we cannot wait 2 years of aging. we do the 16 months in oak, same aging as with this wine. But sometimes we cannot age such a long time in the bottle because the pressure of the market is a bit bigger. So we have to sometimes come out a bit earlier with the wine, because when it's out from the market, then we cannot wait so long because of the restaurants and retail shops. So that's why this Star Valley Cabernet Franc is premium, only because it's a shorter aging in the bottle. And this is with the one we are tasting there, we wait for the 2 years, and then it reaches the super premium level.
I got a question for both of you. Do you think is the ageability of each of these Cab Francs? Like, should I cellar this for 5 years, 10 years?
For sure, they can live for 20, 20, 25, 30 years, we say. Okay, 20 years easily they can do. So now we are tasting sometimes 92s, even with a higher yield as in comparison today, and they really show a very nice face, and they are almost 30 years. So we say 20 years easily what they can do. So they are now young vines, both, I think. What we are tasting now.
Okay.
Yes, if you look at the age of my French clones, they are now 10 years old. In 16, they were the sixth year, so already there, they showed quite a good complexity. But I expect when the wines get older, that the quality of the wine will rise so dramatically. I'm quite sure about this. I don't know if it matches very well for 20 or 30 years, but because I don't like too old wines, it's always a question of personal taste. I prefer, let's say, all the wines within maximum 10 to 15
years. Karen has a question, and she wants to know where she can buy Hungarian Cab Franc in the States, particularly Northern California, because that's where she lives.
I have an importer in California, Euro Drink Importer. So they sell currently my 2015 Sénitage or Villagny Franc.
Euro
Drink Importer.
Andrew, what about?
And Taste Hungary in Washington,
D.C.
On the East Coast.
We are working also with the Taste Hungary.
Can you explain what the significance of the crocus is and when people see it, what that means? Sandra, just want to go into what that means for the, if somebody sees that on the label?
So that flower is a special flower because it grows only on the Vilan Hills. And it's a, of course, it's a protected flower. So we have to take care very much of these flowers. And the Appellation Control System in Villagne chose this flower as a sign of the Appellation Controlled wines. So the sign, what András was showing on the bottle, can be found on each bottle, which is part of the Appellation. So which fulfills that regulation, which is written, which is written in the Appellation regulation, in the classic, premium, and super premium level. Of course, super premium only for Cabernet Franc. And yeah, I think it's beautiful that we chose this flower because it's very special and unique for Villagne, what you can find never else.
Perfect,
And it's and the flower represents this THC, this Rictus yeah. Fungaricus Controllatus, which is the Hungarian AOC or DHC or whatsoever.
Yeah,
by the way, Lori, you had asked me what the price of my Cab Franc is. $34 at tasting table.
And how about you, Andrea?
Erhard, can you help me? What is the changing?
What?
I don't know. I don't know how much is now forints and euros, forints and US dollars.
Okay.
Okay.
How much is it in
it's 8,600 forints. This is the retail price. 8,600.
Yep. But in the US or
no, I
or in at your place?
Recalculation. It is in our place. In our place.
Yeah. So hold on for a second. I have Taste Hungary shop here.
Oh, you have that. Oh, perfect.
Okay, so
if
maybe
you have that open, then I don't know by heart what they.
So should we send people to Taste Hungary to get the wine? Can they mail order, like in the States, can they order the wine from Taste Hungary and have it shipped?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I believe at Taste Hungary it was $39, Andrea, because when I was looking.
It must be somewhere in the same prices.
Yeah.
$39.90.
Yeah. When I was trying to get it here to Jersey, I think I saw $39. So. Excellent. So, Deb, we've reached the hour. Do you have any final questions for them?
I don't. I've my questions have been answered.
My last thing before we let you go is kind of a combination question. So, if somebody wants to come and visit your amazing wine region, which I highly, highly recommend, how do you recommend them coming? And how do they get to you? Like, I know you're really close to the Croatian border, but we flew into Budapest. Like, which is the recommended way to get to you?
Yes, I would say still get to Budapest by plane. And from then, if you want to rent a car, it's not too expensive. And it's on the highway, it's 2 hours from there. So it's from the airport to the wine region door, it's no more than 2 hours. So it's... But then you have to take care about it because in Hungary there is zero tolerance. So it's you have to
park, alcohol,
yeah. So it's you have to park down your car, leave the key at the reception, and rent a bike. And bike around the region.
But may not drive with the bike on normal roads, then you're fine too.
Oh boy.
You can ride it all around the region on bike. And you can stop by many, many different wineries with not just with wine, but also with some accommodation and some with brilliant food.
Oh wow! I'll be there. It's just a matter of when.
Okay.
The sooner the better, because I that's one of the things to go back to my family roots. So
it's a four season region, so you can come any season.
Good. Yeah. It'll probably be off season because I own a restaurant and we're closed January, February, March.
Yeah. March would be great.
And hopefully, you know what? If you're ever in the States, I'd love to do a Hungarian wine dinner featuring the wines.
There you go.
So if you're
allowed to go into the US with respect to COVID-19. I think it's still not possible.
Yeah, when travel opens up again for everybody. Yeah. And, you know, if you're in, in New York City, I'm, what, 2.5 hours south of New York City?
Pack the COVID test.
Yeah, we'll have Chef. I'll have to get my family cookbook out and have Chef do something with the Hungarian recipes I have. And we'll do some Hungarian wine tasting and stuff. Would love to do that.
Perfect.
Finally, Andrea, how about you? You want to just tell people where they can find your winery, easiest way on the web, social media? Are you anywhere there that they can find you?
Yeah, we have, I think the best way is to find us on our own website. It's very simple. It's Gere, so GERE.HU. And there you can find everything about us. But we are also there on the social media, of course, at, with the name Gere Attila Winery.
Erhard?
Heumannwines.com, that's the website. I have two Instagram accounts, Erhard Heumann and Heumann7920. I'm LinkedIn, Twitter, yeah. These are, yeah.
Heumanns are everywhere.
Well, thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Thank everything you for joining us. It's been wonderful.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Andrea, we don't want to cut you off. How can people find you also?
It was our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. From our side.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you so much. So much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoytbud. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe to help others find me more easily. And most importantly, tell your wine-loving friends, because if you like the podcast, they will too. Music is Wine by Kevens. Until next week, sláinte.